This is Understanding Israel-Palestine, Beyond the Walls. I'm Margot Patterson, the producer of this week's show. Much of today's program focuses on a daring escape by six Palestinians from a high-security Israeli prison, which riveted Israelis and Palestinians alike. This week, hundreds of Palestinians in the West Bank held sit-in protest before offices of the International Red Cross demanding better treatment for Palestinian detainees held in Israeli prisons. The protesters called on the Red Cross to intervene to protect detainees, especially the six men who escaped this month, were then caught and are said to be subjected to serious abuses, including torture. Since the escape, other Palestinian political prisoners are also experiencing harsher treatment, with many of them now in solitary confinement. More on this story later. Last week, six activists with Combatants for Peace were injured and seven more arrested while delivering water to Palestinians living in the South Hebron Hills. The Israeli military shot tear gas and stun grenades at the convoy, delivering a water tanker to the village of Al-Tuwani. The Israeli government does not allow the Palestinian village to have access to running water, and villagers are forced to buy water in expensive tankards, and this in limited quantities on limited days. With supplies of water restricted, many villagers lack adequate water to cook, bathe, or farm with. Yet while Palestinian villages on the West Bank struggle to attain water, all Jewish settlements are immediately connected to the water grid and provided running water. Water as a Right is a campaign organized by Combatants for Peace, a joint Israeli-Palestinian NGO composed of former Israeli soldiers and Palestinian combatants who have put down their arms to work for peaceful change. While the violent attack on them by Israeli soldiers drew media attention, the NGO said little attention is being paid to the fact that Israel is pursuing a deliberate campaign to drive Palestinians from their homes and villages by depriving them of water. Now to my interview last week with Israeli journalist Oren Zeev, recorded September 15th. In early September, six Palestinian prisoners escaped the high-security Gilboa prison in Israel. Their daring escape via a 20-meter tunnel they dug, reportedly using only a teaspoon, captured attention. The incident highlighted both the situation of Palestinian prisoners and the collective punishment Israel used and is using in response to their escape. Here to talk about the escape and the Israeli response to it is Oren Zeev, a journalist who wrote about this for the Israeli magazine Plus 972 magazine. Oren Zeev, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
Tell us what happened and how Israel has responded to the escape.
So last week, just before one of the Jewish holidays, six Palestinian prisoners managed to escape the Gilboa prison, which is in northern Israel, but not far also from the northern West Bank. The details are not fully exposed, but from what we understand, the prison has been built during the Second Intifada in 2004, and it was built in a way that there's some space under each room. And the prisoners, based on a previous attempt to escape in 2014, lifted a metal plate or structure that was in the toilet and managed to get to a space under the rooms and from there to dig a tunnel to the outside of the prison, just outside the fences. Now, the escape from prison that is for Palestinian so-called security prisoners, high security prison, caught the Israeli authority in a surprise. Nobody thought it could happen. It caught a lot of attention, both in Israeli and Palestinian media, because the story is almost like a Hollywoodic film. They dug this tunnel, they managed to go out, wait outside the prison walls for approximately 15 minutes, and then walk around a few miles to a nearby village, change clothes, and from there, reportedly, they splitted to three different groups. They stayed in couples, and they made their way in northern Israel. Of course, it exposed also the many problems in the Israeli security prison service, but more, it brought to the front pages and to the mainstream media the topic of Palestinian prisoners. We're talking about around 4,650 Palestinian prisoners nowadays in Israeli prison. Israel holds some of them against the international law inside Israel and not only in the West Bank, what also make it harder for their families to visit them when they're allowed to be visited. And while in the Palestinian media, this is a daily issue, the Palestinian prisoner has a special status and they're seen as political prisoners or prisoners of war. Israel sees them as terrorists, or in Hebrew they call them security prisoners, and they get less rights than criminal prisoners in Israeli jail, which means they cannot go on vacations. They're visited, are coordinated with the Red Cross, but have to be approved by Israeli security services. It can be only once a month. They're not allowed to study in some jail. They cannot get time off before the release for good behavior. They cannot work. Despite these hard conditions, many people in Israel see them and claim that they have many benefits. We saw a lot of expressions saying they live in a five-star hotel or in a summer camp, and that Israel, these were calls from right-wing, both in the government and from right-wing NGOs calling to make their condition more harsh than it is.
Well, let me stop you just for a second. Yeah. First, of the 4,650 Palestinian prisoners being held, how many of those prisoners would be either security prisoners or political prisoners, depending on your point of view, and how many would be considered common criminals?
If you were arrested on anything related to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, it can be from a non-violent demonstration to carrying a violent attack that caused killing of Israeli civilians, you will be considered by Israel a security prisoner and by Palestinians a political prisoner. So in addition to that number, you have Palestinians both from inside Israel and from the West Bank sitting for stealing a car or for other felonies. But all of those prisoners are considered political prisoners. Specifically, the six prisoners who ran away are five prisoners from a small organization called the Islamic Jihad. Some of them are in prison for killing Israelis, and others are for planning in the Second Intifada 2 decades ago attacks and different actions that caused killing of Israel civilians. Some of them are for life sentence. And in addition, the sixth prisoner runaway is Zakaria's baby, a well-known figure in the West Bank, born in Jenin refugee camp, was a commander of a militant unit there in the Second Intifada. And he was arrested in 2018 on different charges. His trial didn't finish yet.
Oren, let me make sure I understood you. In terms of people who might be there for stealing a car, they would also be held in an Israeli prison, but they wouldn't be considered a security prisoner, would they?
Usually not. They will be held in a criminal prison.
You wrote that Israel arrested the families of the fugitives, though none of them were suspected of being involved, as part of a pressure campaign to have the fugitives turn themselves in. Prison visits for other Palestinian prisoners were canceled until the end of the month. Palestinian villages were shut down, and a massive manhunt is going on. What other measures are the Israeli authorities taking, and what's been the response to the escape among Israelis and among Palestinians?
So since the escape, the Israeli authority, police, security services, the Israeli army have carried a mass searching campaign around the area. Till now, they caught four of the prisoners in two different groups. And after the investigation, just today or yesterday, their lawyers could meet them. They were arrested a few days ago, but they were not allowed to meet their lawyers. And what they said is that the five from the Islamic Jihad planned this escape for almost 10 months. They dug this tunnel slowly using tools, but not, of course, professional tools like eating tools. And then they decided on this date, and they took with them Zakaria's baby, that is affiliated with the Fatah, with the Palestinian Authority, in hope that they can arrive together to the West Bank and get protection from the Palestinian Authority. Since the escape, Israel gave collective punishment to many prisoners, especially from the ones who are affiliated with the Islamic Jihad, and moved them to different prisons, split them from different rooms, canceled their visits. Today, we got the news that following a pushback from the prisoners that said they're going to open in a mass hunger strike, Israel canceled some of this punishment and limitation. Regarding the family members, at least from the news I'm getting, most of them were released after a few days when even the Israeli authorities understood they didn't have any connection to the escape. Since the escape, there's also been a very interesting debate in Israel, in Palestinian media, about the question, did Palestinian citizens of Israel, Palestinian living inside Israel, what the Israeli media calls Israeli Arabs, did they assist the prisoners? Or in the other hand, as some politicians said, did they assist the police in catching those prisoners? Because there was different rumors and different information about that. And from what the prisoners are saying, at least in the last 24 hours, speaking to the lawyers, they're saying that from the first minutes outside prison, from the first hours, they were walking alone and they didn't approach people because they didn't want to get them in trouble. And in the area where they were caught, there was a massive operation of police, of security services, drones, helicopters, flying checkpoints and so on. So it didn't take them much to catch them.
I was intrigued by your mention that many in Israeli society have been captivated by the story, by the Hollywood aspects of it, as you point out. Have you been surprised by that? And does there seem to be some sympathy for these prisoners?
It's a good question. I think people were amazed and shocked and also entertained by the fact that the guard tower, there was nobody there that night because of lack of manpower. A patrol car that is supposed to drive around the prison was not operating in recent months because of lack of budget as well. The dogs were barking, there's guard dogs, they were barking, but another guard that was falling asleep or half asleep looked and didn't see anything. And the guard who was responsible on the security cameras was watching TV instead of the CCTV cameras. The prisoners had a lot of luck and also probably planned it well how to go out. So they planned the hour after the guards checked that everybody is in their cells. And then they crawled for nearly 20 minutes and went out. In the beginning, Israeli authorities thought they had a car or somebody picking, and this was not the case. Back to your question about the sympathy, I think because it's such a Hollywoodic story, people had sympathy with six people who were in prison who managed to kind of win even for a few hours or a few days against Israel and a very strong security system. On the same time, you would see many people calling to make their condition harsher or to kill them and not to capture them. So I think it's not that people really understood their motivation to run, or really saw them as political prisoners, or understood how Palestinian prisoners are seen in Palestinian society. But I didn't think it opened them kind of a window to this world. As I said, the Palestinian prisoners have very special status in Palestinian society, especially in the West Bank, because according to the official statistics of the Palestinian authorities, since 67, since the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, 1 out of 5 Palestinians have been imprisoned in Israel. So we're talking about every family, every village, every town. So it's a big story, not only when the escapes happen, but also on daily basis. And today, Zakaria Zbedi told to his lawyer, Avigdor Feldman, that later told it to the media that for him, he went out because if you see a door open, of course, you're going to go out. So he was not part of the initial plan, but then he was just the night before, a few days before, he was informed about it and he decided to join the 5 other prisoners.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Zakaria Zubeidi, because as you mentioned, he's the most prominent of the prisoners. He was once a commander in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, an armed wing of the Fatah movement that waged a violent campaign against the Israeli occupation during the Second Intifada. Later, he became an advocate of cultural resistance and founded Freedom Theater in his hometown of Jenin and engaged with Israeli peace advocates. Talk about why he is such a significant figure and so well known.
I think, first of all, his story and the story of his family. His grandfather managed to escape from Israeli prisons in the 50s. His family was displaced from inside Israel in the 48 war, in the Nakba, into the West Bank. He was leading in the Second Intifada when Israel went to reoccupy the Palestinian cities. So he was leading the resistance in Jenin refugee camp, which was considered maybe the hardest battle for the Israeli army, where many Israeli soldiers died during this exchange of fire. He was leading that. His home was demolished. His mother was shot in a different incident. One of his other brothers died. He himself got injured in his face while preparing some explosive. And he was wanted by Israel for many, many years. He used to change houses and locations. And then after the end of the Second Intifada, he joined officially the PA. And at some point, Israel took him off from the list of wanted people and he could move freely again. Then he was part of, as you mentioned, of this Freedom Theater in Jenin that tried to bring kind of a different aspect and a different cultural activity to the Jenin refugee camp that was highly damaged during the Second Intifada. At the end, in order to occupy the refugee camp, Israel had to use D9 bulldozers and literally demolish house after house and a big percentage of the camp in order to gain control of the area. So he's a very popular and well-known figure in the West Bank. And in 2019, he was arrested in suspicion of shooting attack at towards a settler's bus in the West Bank. Nobody was injured in this incident, but he was arrested and trial is still going on.
You alluded to there being several myths surrounding Palestinian prisoners that circulate in Israel. Could you talk more about that?
Yes. Palestinian prisoners, compared to criminal prisoners in Israel, they cannot, and I think maybe the most harsh condition is that they cannot have legal phone calls to their relatives. So somebody is in prison for 5, 10, or even life sentence. Beside the visits, officially they cannot use public phone. Of course, they have smuggled cell phones, mostly smuggled by workers of the prison that do it for profit, and they can use these cell phones. General Israeli right-wing and also different ministers during the Netanyahu government promoted and even set up a committee to kind of degrade their rights. Even the prison service and the security services opposed this because they wanted to keep some quiet in the at the prison. As I talked to a source that is well aware of what's going in the prison, the source told me that if the prisoners have the smuggled phones and can speak with the families, and if they have TV channels to watch TV, and if they can entertain themselves and pass the days, they're not going to do a strike or a hunger strike or revolt in the prison, or there's less chances that this has happened. The second thing, and I think, and this is maybe where the myth comes from, is that Palestinian prisoners, in comparison to the criminal prisoners, are very well organized. They're separated by political affiliation, and each section in the prison has a spokesperson that speaks with the authorities in the prison. He represents everything. And of course, if there's a political decision to make a hunger strike, to make other action, usually everybody's committed to that because the Palestinian street, the Palestinian public is so well aware of what's happening in the prison. Things that are happening in the prison affect the outside world. And as we saw this week, protests and even some riots in the West Bank. And from that, from the fact that the prisoners are united and organized in groups, they have power in front of the authorities. And through the years, they got some autonomy, some rights, like having the spokesperson and sometimes deciding who will be or asking who will be in which room in the prison, like who will be with who. And this is kind of a thing that started both from their power of being united and from an interest of the Israeli authorities to keep the prisons quiet and without political tension.
I want to ask you about something Amjad Araki, the editor of Plus 972 magazine, wrote in an editor's note about the prisoners' escape. He wrote that whether Palestinians resist violently or nonviolently, the Israeli authorities treat any and all resistance as illegitimate. He went on to comment that same attitude pervades discourse in the United States, where, he writes, peaceful boycotts or a demand for freedom and equality are treated as a call for Jewish annihilation. I want to ask you whether you think Araki is correct in saying that all Palestinian resistance, peaceful or otherwise, is regarded as illegitimate by Israeli authorities, and whether there's any pushback to that maximalist viewpoint.
He's totally right. Each boy or youth that goes out to protest, even in the non-violent, non-armed protests that we see in the West Bank every Friday, every Palestinian youth, even underage, can find himself in prison for many months or even a year just for participating in a protest. Because even if he didn't do anything or this, we have to remember that Palestinians are being charged in a military court, meaning that the judge is a Israeli soldier judging them and sentencing them. So, of course, Palestinian, also myself and the other writers of in 972, we don't see any possibility to get any justice in those courts that are military courts and operate by military laws and orders in the West Bank. Now, for the second part of the question, I think, of course, it's hard for the Israeli society to understand or to empathize with people who carried violent attacks against Israelis, especially in the Second Intifada almost 20 years ago. But as Zakaria's Zbedi uncle told another reporter from 972, he said, so our hands are covered with blood. What are the hands of the Israeli covered with? And what he's trying to say that on both sides, people used violence and killed innocent people. And the question is there a possibility to move forward? In my opinion, at least in any attempt, and I don't think the Israeli government is ready or is in that direction. But in any further agreement, those Palestinian prisoners, especially the leaders from them, like Marwan Barghouti and like Zakaria Zebedi and others, will have to be released, even if they did violent attacks that are very hard and to understand from the Israeli perspective. And of course, for the Israeli propaganda, it's very easy to use this terminology that, so now boycott is a economical terror, and even people who choose non-violent or more popular way of resistance are still considered terrorists and criminals and dealt in the same system. In many times, I cover the popular protests against the wall and against settlements in the West Bank for nearly 15 years. And I think many Israelis were always asking why the Palestinians are doing these violent attacks 20 years ago and they're not protesting peacefully. Even when they protest peacefully, the Israeli authorities use live ammunition, as we've seen in the village of Beta in recent months near Nablus, where people have been protesting against a new settlement and were answered with live ammunition that killed 6 Palestinians.
Oren Ziv, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you so much.
For more about the view that all resistance to the Israeli occupation is illegitimate, I want to turn to Jonathan Kutab, an international human rights attorney who practices law in the United States, Israel, and Palestine. Jonathan Kutab, what does international law say about people's right to resist military occupation?
International law recognizes the right of people to resist military occupation. Of course, places certain limits on what people who are resisting, as well as what the occupation forces can do. The occupation forces can arrest somebody, but they shouldn't use collective punishment. However, there is something that's even beyond that. We must understand that the Palestinian people living under military occupation have been doing so for over half a century. This is an entire population. This is not like the usual situation during a war, when the war ended and there's a temporary occupation until peace comes. This is pretty much a permanent state of affairs. So you have the entire Palestinian population living under a regime which they did not elect, which they did not choose, which isn't accountable to them, and which just does whatever it wants. And any kind of resistance to its authority, even the most benign, nonviolent resistance, is considered illegitimate and illegal.
And what does international law say about people's right to resist violently?
People have the right to use arms, to resist with violence, but they cannot, for example, target civilians or non-combatants. So they're resisting soldiers. Now, when the occupying army brings its own civilians into the occupied territories illegally, and the very presence of these settlers is illegal, it's not very clear then if you resist and if you fight or kill or use violence against these settlers. It's not clear what that means, because their very existence there is illegal and illegitimate.
The 6 Palestinians who escaped a high security prison in Israel in September took part in the Second Intifada. Could you briefly remind listeners of what the Second Intifada or uprising was about and what sparked it?
The Palestinians have had 2 major intifadas or rebellions. The first was largely nonviolent. It was massive. Everybody resisted. They wrote slogans on walls. They lifted flags. They had strikes. They had very creative methods of nonviolence. And they also threw stones. They didn't use weapons, but they did throw stones at the Israelis. And the Israelis really reacted very violently against them. And that only created even more resistance. The Second Intifada started nonviolently, but when the Israelis tried to smash it, Palestinians, particularly from the different Palestinian groups, actually used weapons. The Second Intifada started when Ariel Sharon, with 1,000 soldiers, entered into the Al-Aqsa Mosque to assert their power and assert their rule over Jerusalem with violence. And people reacted, and many of them reacted violently. Many of them reacted nonviolently. So these particular prisoners, from what I know, were part of the Second Intifada resistance to the Israeli occupation.
At least one of the Palestinian fugitives told his lawyer, when he was finally allowed to see him, that after he was recaptured, he was tortured by Israeli interrogators. His lawyer said that Muhammad al-Arda was stripped naked, beaten, deprived of food, sleep, and medical attention, and subjected to brutal interrogation.
First of all, torture under any conditions, no matter who is the perpetrator and no matter who is the victim, is illegal. International law on that issue is absolutely clear. Israel, however, uses torture. In the beginning, they used to lie about it until it became very clear and very obvious. And then the Israeli forces said, we're not going to lie about it anymore. We'll simply call it something else. We'll call it psychological pressure or moderate physical pressure. But Israel has been using torture systematically against Palestinian prisoners for two purposes. Number one, to break their will and obtain information. Number two, to obtain confessions, which they can use in military courts. In military courts, it is possible to challenge a confession taken under torture, but that challenge is usually useless because it only creates what's called a mini trial, which is held in secret around the question of admissibility of the evidence. And in 99.9% of the cases, it's always held admissible. And then they really throw the book at you if you avail yourself of this challenge. So since almost all convictions in military courts are based on confessions taken under torture, it becomes a routine matter that you can do nothing about torture or about the confessions taken under torture.
As Oren Ziv has just told us, Palestinians regard the six men as political prisoners or prisoners of war, Israelis as terrorists. How should those of us who are neither Palestinian nor Israelis regard these six individuals?
I think you have to look at these six individuals as part of the literally hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who have been arrested at one time or another. I don't know of any situation where such a high percentage of the population, if you look at the adult male population, I think the figures are like 40% of all adult males have at one time or another been imprisoned by Israel. This is huge. This is like an entire population that's living with the constant threat of arrest. Now, those who are arrested by the Israelis and put in jail can either be brought to military court, as I said, based on some false confession taken under torture, or they can be placed under administrative detention, which means no charges, no trial. We just want to keep you in jail for 6 months, which we can renew for another six, another six, another six. So Palestinians many times agree to be convicted in order not to be continuously kept in jail indefinitely with no date of release.
That was Jonathan Kutab, international human rights lawyer. Jonathan Kutab, thank you so very much for talking to us today. You've been listening to Understanding Israel-Palestine on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.